Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Martin Ødegaard, the Arsenal captain, to take the first penalty, and he scores emphatically. Brilliant penalty, and look at the celebration from Ødegaard. Pepe strides forward, little stutter. Great penalty. Havertz against Costa. The Germans always score the penalties, and he doesn't let Arsenal down. So now the responsibility falls to Wendell. Oh, he's saved it! Gavin Ryan saves it! This is for daylight. Saka doesn't miss. Short runner. Buries it. Absolutely buries it. Boos ringing around the Emirates. Raya waits. Big moment. Got his hands to it, but can't keep it out.
What's
so close to saving another one. So now it's Declan Rice. The first time he's taken a penalty as an Arsenal player. They wouldn't want to be sending anybody else to the penalty spot at this point. He's scored 6 goals in 6 games coming into tonight. Scored a really good goal in a leg in the track out. And with rain falling here in North London, Galeno has to score to keep Porto in the Champions League. If David Raya can pull off a save here, Arsenal are through.
He's not in his best name, I can tell you that.
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to an extra Arsecast Extra. As always with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly fucking morning.
Goodly morning, man. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you? I mean, that was pretty intense last night. It was one of those games where you get to bed late. Obviously, you were there and you're sort of soaking in all that atmosphere. But even if you're watching on TV, you go to bed, it's after midnight, maybe 1 o'clock, you're lying there and you're still sort of, whew, Jesus, there was a lot going on in that game. How was it for you?
I mean, you know, well, for a game in which there wasn't necessarily a lot going on, it felt like there was a lot going on, if you know what I mean. And a penalty shootout is kind of pretty nerve shredding. Particularly, I think, given what happened last season, you know, the Sporting Lisbon game, another Portuguese team going all the way to the shootout, had this horrible sense of deja vu, creeping deja vu. So to get the right outcome was just a huge relief. I'll be honest, having been in Portugal and been at that game, what felt like a bit of a marathon tie, you know, like it was, we really sort of had to grind that one out.
Yes. It feels like we played about 4 weeks of football over the course of 2 games.
Yeah.
Against,
but the
Porto.
Ball was only in play for about 4 minutes of that.
I mean, look, I think there are so many things and aspects about this that we can talk about and touch on. But, you know, you have to, I think, in some ways, look at the way Porto approach both of these games. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about what it might mean for Arsenal going forward. But certainly, you know, we talked about the first leg and we talked about, you know, how they made life difficult for Arsenal and how they negated much of what Arsenal are good at. And I think there was maybe just a perception that at home, with the atmosphere, with, you know, the occasion, the expectation, all of that kind of stuff, that might be something that Arsenal were able to overcome in the second leg. But it really wasn't the case. And for so much of these two legs, we've had to play a game that I'm not going to say we're uncomfortable with, but it's a game I think that Porto, for all their flaws and foibles and frustrations, and people can, you know, I'm sure we'll get on to some bits and pieces, like they did to us what very few teams have done to us over the last couple of years, that we were sort of playing to the beat of their drum rather than dictating play ourselves. And over the course of two legs, where it's like a 1-0 in the first leg with a late goal, and then, you know, we score, we get, it's all on kind of a knife edge all the way through. Like, it was difficult to deal with and frustrating. I think that added to the sense of frustration throughout and also relief at the end.
Yes, I think so. There's a naturally relationship, isn't there, between all that frustration and then the moment of relief when you finally get over the line. I don't know if we're uncomfortable to play it, but we're certainly inexperienced at playing it and less experienced than Porto. I mean, you know, they were happy for that tie to be on that knife edge. I think they were happy to kind of take that gamble. I think they were happy to go all the way to penalties and try their luck in that respect. And that made them a very, very awkward opponent to deal with. And I don't think this was a brilliant Arsenal performance. I really don't. I think it's a great win and it's brilliant. We got over the line and fantastic. We're in the quarterfinals, but it was not a vintage tie. And I didn't think we were at our best, but that doesn't matter this morning.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I really do think that this particular tie and these two legs could be a really big learning experience for Arsenal, because going into the quarterfinals now, there are going to be better teams than Porto. And I'm not taking anything away from really Porto's game plan. This is what you have to deal with. This is what you've got to encounter in Europe, and you've got to master, and you've got to be able to get on top of, like, where the cynicism, the game plan, it's all designed to come out with the right result. And of course that makes, you know, makes obvious sense. But there's sort of sometimes like this idea that there's a purist approach to football and what they do, or, you know, this kind of approach might be anti-football in a way, but it is just going as far as you can with the gamesmanship, with the dark arts, with, you know, even your tactics. And I think Porto tactically and technically gave Arsenal a lot to think about in these two legs. But as a learning experience for this team, and as a way to sort of step forward, I do wonder if we will have a more difficult opponent. Again, it's not necessarily just about the quality of the opposition, but in terms of how this particular opponent was going to play this game over the course of 180, or as it turned out, 210 minutes, whatever it was, with extra time. Like, it was very, very hard for Arsenal to sort of control the game, and that's been the key word about Arsenal for much of the season, is control. Like, we didn't really have control at any point. There were periods where we had pressure, there were periods where we played the game in their half, but did it feel like we, like any of the Premier League games we played this season? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. And I think you're right. I don't think, famous last words, but I don't think we'll face an opponent quite like Porto in the next round, or however far we go in the competition. I think they are kind of the master exponents of some of these particular dark arts. I mean, they literally have Pepe in their team, you know, like teaching them all how to do it. So I think it was a very particular challenge, and we got through it. And I think that is the key thing, really, that is the big takeaway. We got through it because we have to be honest and say that Arsenal, I remember Jose Mourinho talking about Manchester United and being mocked for his comments about football heritage, but Arsenal genuinely don't have a great deal of Champions League pedigree at this point in their history. You know, we are not a club who regularly go deep into this competition, and haven't been beyond this round for, what, 14 years? So I think I think it's just huge to have got over the line and taken this step, however we did it.
Yeah.
I think it was just so important for the players, for Arteta, for the club, for the fans. And I don't think it's something we could take for granted that we would do it. So
no.
It's really good to be in that draw. And yeah, I think we'll be a stronger team for having come through this time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. And I think as well, you know, some of the recent European exits raised question marks, right? About experience in Europe and how important experience in Europe is. They were saying on TV last night, this was Sergio Conceição's 50, he's been in charge for like 50 odd games in the Champions League, and yeah. Mikel Arteta has not yet reached double figures, and there have been a couple of European exits that really, you know, we should not have gone out to the teams that we went out to in the manner in which we went out as well. So there was that kind of thing hanging over this tie. Like, it's distinct from what we did in the Europa League. It's distinct from, you know, the opposition that we faced in those games. But it's also just sort of there in the back of your mind, particularly as we got to the end of 90 minutes and as we got to the end of 120 minutes. I mean, how was it there in your mind? Because it was in mine. I was thinking about like late goal against Olympiacos and you know, those kinds of things where you know, we let it slip right at the death. Do you remember there was a free kick, I think, maybe in, was it the end of extra time? I'm just going to check the live blog. I think it was. Free kick, a chance to put it in their box is what I wrote in the.
Oh, yeah, the last kick of extra time.
Yeah, it was a chance to put it in their box. And then Arsenal set up in a different way where they did not commit men forward because at that point, I think we've learned that, okay, you could possibly win it, but you're also increasing the chance of you losing this game. You know, if you pump it forward, you send your big men up, and all of a sudden they break up the other end and score a goal, and you're sitting there going, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think even small things like that are an indication that Arsenal are maturing, and Mikel Arteta maybe is maturing as a manager in terms of his instructions from the sidelines, and that some of the lessons that have been harshly dealt out over the last number of years in Europe have been learned.
Maybe, yeah. It's interesting that there was a lot of frustration in the crowd around me at that moment, because I think everyone was like, you know, get it in the box, get it in the mixer, see if we can win it. It's just a fascinating thing, I think, to a game, to a tie, when you don't have to win, like, in normal time. I do think that affects the complexion of everything. I think it affected the first leg that we didn't have to win it in Portugal. And I think it affected the first 90 minutes a little bit, that we knew, well, look, there's another 30 minutes potentially to come. There's penalties beyond that. It is an entirely different beast to a Premier League game. And, you know, you think back to Brentford, the urgency that gives you when you know that clock is ticking down, and once it gets to 90, that's it. That doesn't quite exist in a very delicately poised Champions League tie like this. And Arteta spoke afterward and said, it's so difficult to replicate that. There's sort of so few ways. You can't really emulate it in training. It's sort of something that you have to live. And Arsenal did live it last night. And yeah, but there were some nervy moments as well. You know, it's funny, I'm just looking at the stats now. Porto had 10 shots in the game, only 3 on target. But every time they got, you know, within 18 yards of our goal, you felt that tension in the stadium. You know, there was that kind of moment of silence, because a goal for them, even without the away goals rule, would have had a dramatic kind of swing effect on the evening.
Yeah, for sure. And look, we saw over the course of the 120 minutes, how difficult it was to break them down, leaving aside all the frustration with their antics and the way they fall over and the way the official... Well, listen, we might talk about the ref in a minute, because he's a bit of a sidebar, but I do think it's one worth mentioning, because I was just like, what the fuck? But, you know, for all of the dark arts, Porto are very well organized, tactically very clever, I think, technically very good. And when you look at the goal that we scored, the brilliance of it, it's sort of next level. Like, that's where you've got to go to get a goal against this Porto team. You know, they dealt with all our set pieces really well over the course of the two legs, and we know how strong we are from set pieces against pretty much every team. But Porto did their homework, did their preparation. They negated so much of what we were and are good at, both, you know, in open play and from set pieces. So when you look at just how hard it was to find that goal, and it's a really, really brilliant goal, and the timing of it, I think, is worth mentioning as well. You can tell me whether this is the case or not, but certainly around 35, 40 minutes, the atmosphere inside that stadium sounded amazing. But at that point, as the game had gone the way it had gone, and we, you know, it was back and forward a bit, it was fairly even, we weren't in control. And I was thinking, certainly, right, okay, we get to halftime. What are we going to do? How can we change it? Maybe change the dynamic a little bit. You could just sense perhaps a little bit of the frustration or nerves or whatever it might be creeping into the crowd, because that's completely understandable, because you expect Arsenal, come out of the blocks, big European night, let's go at them. It doesn't quite pan out that way, and you're getting towards halftime and it's 0-0. You're thinking, well, where is the goal going to come from? And what Martin Odegaard did was brilliant. But I mean, the timing of it, let's say 5 minutes or so before the break, I think is huge, because Porto had done really well and then they were undone and then we were back in it. So, you know, was that something that you experienced in the ground, that like it was just beginning to get a little bit tense?
Yeah, I'd say it tipped maybe even a little bit further than that. I mean, obviously the atmosphere at kickoff and for the opening 15 minutes was electric. And, you know, Arsenal and Arteta particularly had been really clear in calling for that from the fans. And they responded, and, you know, you had the whole shebang, light shows, flags, everything, right? But I suppose the problem of all that hype and all that adrenaline and all that alcohol is that, you know, when there isn't that kind of early breakthrough, that has to go somewhere, right? And there was definitely a lot of frustration around. I'd say kind of around the half-hour mark, the atmosphere, it'd be wrong to say it turned, but it was in the air, you know, and some players were starting to get a bit of stick. Funnily enough, Leandro Trossard was probably chief among them. Really? Around me. I'd say about 30 or 40 seconds before he scored. I'm sure they won't mind me saying, but a few guys around me were really laying into him. One of them finished off by saying, I'd rather have an injured Martinelli on the field than Trossard. And it was about 20 seconds after that he had the ball in the net. So that shows you that, you know, we were kind of on the precipice of that frustration sort of tipping over. So it was a brilliant time to score for the team and for the crowd as well, and shifted the balance of the tie. Lovely goal too. I mean, you know, Odegaard's assist is, you know, it's right up there with anything in Mesut Ozil's book, really, in terms of the footwork and the through ball. And Trossard, you know, hadn't had the tidiest game until that point, but he's a good finisher once he gets into the penalty box.
For sure. And I think, you know, one aspect of this goal that we have to credit Odegaard with, I mean, the creativity is obviously is there. Everyone can see that. The precision and the weight of the pass. I think it demanded that kind of touch and finish from Trossard. You know, this is what I've given you, this, now you fucking finish it, which he did. And it really is a good touch and a finish from Trossard. But before that, like, to win the ball high up the pitch the way he did, like, Odegaard's, I haven't seen the stats yet, but I'm sure in terms of the amount of sprints, in terms of the amount of distance covered in this game, he must be very, very close to the top. And you know, everyone thinks of Odegaard as this kind of creative flair, craft player, which is undoubtedly true. But the work rate, I think, he demonstrates is basically second to none. You know, the just the sheer amount of running he does and the awareness. And he was really switched on to win a second ball high up the pitch. And it's like, these are the fine margins in games like this, where if he's sort of on his heels a little bit and the Porto player gets the ball and a different passage of play develops, you don't score the goal, you know, maybe, it is so important to be able to do what he does, not just the creativity, but the hard work. And I think that transmits itself all the way through the team, that people see their captain putting in those hard yards, chasing down the goalkeeper, knowing he's not going to get anywhere near the ball because he's going to pass it away from him, but he still does that chasing. You know, if you're on the pitch with him, you know, you can't let him down by not doing your bit too.
Yeah, he was a man possessed, wasn't he, on the night, Odegaard? I get the sense with him. Listen, every game he's like that, so I think every game is important to him. But I do just wonder, when I look at his story, his kind of pedigree, you know, ever since he was a teenager, he's been talked about as one of the best young talents in Europe. And now here he is captaining an elite club in the knockout stages of the Champions League. He must sort of have a kind of sense of destiny, I think, about this competition. Especially having gone to Real Madrid as a kid. I think in some ways he's always been a sort of Champions League player in waiting, and now he's living it. And he seemed absolutely insistent that his competition wasn't going to end last night.
No, it was just an amazing piece of play. And like, ultimately, over the course of 120 minutes last night, that 5 seconds that he produced was decisive. It was enough to get us, you know, to the end of extra time and into a penalty shootout. I mean, the second half was it scrappy? Was it end to end? I don't quite know how you would describe it. It was tense. It was weird. There were moments. I think Arsenal played a lot in their half without necessarily creating too much. And then I think to what extent did the way the referee officiated this game feed into your experience of what happened? Because, like, I thought he was a bit demented. Like, I didn't quite understand what was going on. Like, there would be an obvious... There was one, for example. There was a foul on Saka, and it was a fairly obvious foul, and he let it go, and then Saka, I think, made a foul himself, and he blew up for the foul on Saka, and there seemed to be so many moments like that. And there were, in fairness, a couple of moments that I guess Porto could have been frustrated with, but I didn't really understand the way he was officiating this game. Like, what was a foul and what wasn't a foul? It just seemed to be potluck, you know? And I think that certainly, as I was watching on TV, I was like, this is fucking driving me mad. My head was going fucking round in circles because I just didn't know what the referee was going to do in any given moment, whether it was going to be for us, for them, you know, what would happen if he let a play go on. And I think that fed into, you know, the way I was feeling about the game, and I'm pretty sure that the referee got pelters from where you were too, right?
Yeah, he did. I mean, I have to say, like, on a personal level, it didn't... I suppose I just... My overriding sense was, we've got a European referee here, and it felt like, yeah, as you say, his kind of definitions and interpretations of the laws were maybe slightly different to what we are accustomed to. I think there was a lot of frustration in the ground about that. I felt that he kind of came into the game, my best guess would be sort of thinking, I don't want to start booking people because it will just never stop. But it seemed like he was surprisingly reticent to give out yellow cards. I think actually on both sides, I feel there were moments where he might have booked people and didn't. All in all, very surprising, because obviously he's Leandro Trossard's twin brother, so I thought he would be more on our side. But yeah, the whole night, actually, I had this sense of, oh, this is different. It is different from the Premier League. And I mean that in terms of the officiating on a sort of decision-by-decision basis, the fact that stoppage time, I think, is treated so differently in the Champions League.
What the fuck was going on with, like, the first half? I know this is not our... We don't have to complain, but I was like, 1 minute?
Yeah.
Like, within 2 minutes of the game, the Porto goalkeeper was taking ages over a goal kick, and I knew that because I could see it, but I could hear the Arsenal fans making it very obvious to the referee that, you know, this was going on, and there seemed to be... quite a lot of that in the first half, but they only ended up at 1 minute. It was weird.
I know. It's almost as if UEFA want to make sure they cut to their lucrative commercials on time, you know? But it was a real throwback, wasn't it, to like the days when stoppage time just felt completely made up and, woefully insufficient. And actually, like in the stadium as well, UEFA don't permit the kind of ticking clock beyond 45-minute mark, beyond the 90-minute mark, so you're sort of a bit clueless about where exactly you are within that stoppage time. And the officiating, you know. So it did make for sort of a different environment, for sure. It felt like we were playing a different competition, which we were.
Well, yes. And again, this comes back to, you know, learning how to manage those situations and maybe coming to terms with how referees from different countries officiate and see the game.
Can I ask you on the subject of the referee? Because obviously we don't always get the benefit of replays of fouls. And I have to say, like, from my seat in the crowd, part of the reason I sort of just shrugged at the officiating was because I don't know when Porto are chucking themselves over and when they're not. You know, it's really hard without replays to not have any sense of what's a foul and what isn't. But what about the disallowed goal? I haven't actually seen it back. What happened?
Well, ball went over the top. Havertz chased down. I think Pepe and the goalkeeper make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process of making that mistake, you can clearly see that Havertz has a little bit of Pepe's shirt. He pulls his shirt a little bit. I genuinely don't think it makes any difference to what happened. I think Pepe would have made the mistake. I don't think what Havertz did, for example, is what made Pepe and the goalkeeper fuck it up and allow Odegaard to score. But once the replay show very clearly that Havertz has got some of his shirt, I think it's always going to be disallowed. And, you know, applying, you know, the reverse situation, if Porto had scored a goal like that and Evanescence or whatever his fucking Evanilson, you know, had a handful of Gabriel's shirt and that goal stood, we would be going absolutely crazy, even if it's a bit soft. So I do think it was a bit soft, but I can understand why that goal was disallowed.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the North Bank, we were pretty much the last to know. There was a lot of celebrations when the ball hit the net there, but yeah, pulled back. And it looked a little bit squiffy, a bit dodgy from my angle.
Yeah.
But, like I say, wasn't sure.
Yeah, Mikel Arteta got booked after that.
He did. I
think he got booked because they showed a replay on television. I've never seen a manager get booked for doing one of the motions from charades before.
Yeah, it was for making the VAR.
Yeah, the TV gesture. Like, book, two words. You know, it was that, and he got booked in the immediate aftermath for that. And obviously, look, he was desperate for that goal to stand. But I think when he sees it, even if he would probably concur with my view that it was soft, you can understand why it was disallowed.
Right. Okay.
So at that point, were you thinking about changes? Were you thinking about how we might be able to sort of freshen things up a little bit, to sort of change the dynamic? Jesus coming on for somebody was my obvious first choice sub, but I didn't quite figure out who it was going to be. I sort of looked at Jorginho after about 65 minutes and I was, does he have the legs for the last 25 minutes of this game and beyond? I didn't think he did. So it wasn't 100% surprising to me that change was made, but it came relatively late.
It was in the last 10 minutes, I think, of normal time.
82nd, 83rd minute.
Yeah.
Thereabouts.
I guess it weighed heavily in Arteta's mind that there was a very strong chance this game was going to extra time. And I think he thought, well, you know, I don't need to make these subs in a hurry, but there was a bit of frustration, I think, around me about how long it took for changes to come. I mean, one thing I would say is we don't know a great deal about how ready, how sharp the likes of Jesus and Zinchenko are at this point in time. You know, maybe if Jesus was fully, fully fit, maybe if he had, you know, rhythm, momentum and all those things, maybe he would have come on earlier. But maybe there was a feeling of, you know, he might end up playing 40 minutes here, and that's about as much as we can ask of him.
Yeah, maybe so.
We don't want to have to sub a sub, you know?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the answer is, you know, is pretty obvious then, if you do apply that logic to it, that, yeah, he was brought on knowing that we were going to have basically a, you know, he was going to play a full half of football, more or less, you know? Mm-hmm. Zinchenko, when he came on, I think you can see he was a little bit rusty. And even on a big night like this, it tells you something about how fit Thomas Partey is that he wasn't used, given his experience in this competition. You know, for a, yeah, for a club that's gone all the way to the final. I mean, he was part of a team that went to the final, was he? With Atletico Madrid, I'm not 100% sure, but certainly, you know, loads of Champions League experience with Atletico Madrid. So he didn't get on the pitch, and I think that says a lot about his readiness to play in this kind of game. Jesus could have scored with his first touch, though. There was a lovely bit of play between, was it, I can't remember who it was at this point, but the ball broke in the box. Maybe Saka and Odegaard involved, and the ball broke, and Jesus, like the goalkeeper's, the underneath of the goalkeeper's thigh saved Porto in that moment. It was nearly an amazing first touch for Jesus.
Yeah, he'd been on a matter of seconds at that point in time. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? They were happy to go to extra time, for sure, I think. And we didn't get desperate in those final few minutes. Like you said, you know, even in those final moments where we had the set piece and decided not to chuck it into the box at the end of extra time, I think we were prepared to be patient and kind of wait it out and wait for our moment and, you know, that's good. I think that's promising. It's a sign of us sort of learning to manage the game and manage the occasion. You mentioned Zinchenko coming on, by the way. I thought, as someone who's, you know, been occasionally a bit skeptical of him, I thought Jakub Kivior had maybe his best game in an Arsenal shirt. I thought he was really, really good on the night.
100%. There was one brilliant moment where I think they had a shot, which Raya saved, and the ball broke for the forward. Like, as it turned out, the guy was offside, but it was still a really fantastic piece of defending by Kivior. Yeah. And even in some of the one-on-one situations where I think at times he has been just a little bit exposed when the ball goes over his head and he has to run back towards his own goal. A few times last night, he did that very, very well and dealt with the Porto threat down the right-hand side really well, which is, you know, again, when I was thinking about changes, who do you bring on? Zinchenko felt like sort of an obvious change if you were going to go and win the game, but I didn't want to break up that back four, really, because I thought Kivior had done exceptionally well.
And Tomiyasu was on the bench, you know, and wasn't used. Ben White played full 120 minutes, which I think tells you again, you know, these players are fit again, but how fit are they? Because I think in other circumstances, we probably would have seen them.
Yeah, so extra time. Again, another crapshoot in terms of what decisions the referee was going to make. There was a moment where Havertz pushed Conceição. Bit of aggro.
Yeah,
I mean, it did get tetchy, and maybe it could have got a little bit tetchier at times, but it was, you know, this was a very intense game. Two teams, two sets of coaches, managers, etc., who really, really desperately wanted to win this game. Both managers on yellows, as we've said. I sort of like the sly shithousery of Havertz. He does have this sort of slightly innocent looking face, but also puts himself about a little bit. Like, no Arsenal player has been booked more this season than Kai Havertz. Sure. So there is a little bit of edge to his game.
Truly, we have replaced Granit Xhaka, I guess. I liked the moment with Conceição, certainly, you know. Especially because Havertz, it's not like, as far as I'm aware, as far as I could see, it's not like Conceição had sort of strayed out of his technical area.
No.
Havertz very much went into his space and pushed him.
Yeah.
Which I did enjoy. Maybe more on Conceição later, given some of his post-match claims. But yeah, it was tetchy, it was tight. I think in the first half of extra time, we didn't necessarily have a great deal of fluency. At that point in time, we had neither Jorginho nor Zinchenko nor Partey, I guess, on the pitch. And I felt that maybe affected our fluency, our ability to kind of build up from the back. It felt a little bit like we were, you know, maybe forcing it at times or having to be a bit more direct. So yeah, it was kind of sticky extra time. And I, in the ground, I have to say, like, I don't think any of us had massive expectation of a winner. I think we all had a kind of slightly grim feeling that this was headed for a shootout.
Yeah, well, that again plays into what I was talking about with, you know, that moment towards the end where we could have committed men forward and we didn't. And, you know, I think Arsenal probably had a good reason to be confident about their ability to do the job in a penalty shootout as well.
Well, I mean, you know, they've had a lot of penalty takers this season. They've mixed it up a bit, you know. Mm. The likes of Havertz, Saka, Odegaard have all taken competitive penalties already. So I think in some ways that's a nice preparation for a shootout.
Didn't we do a few, like we had a penalty shootout against Manchester United in pre-season?
Yes.
There was a penalty shootout. No, there wasn't a penalty shootout in the...
Well, we had a penalty shootout to win the Community Shield, I believe. I seem to remember Aaron Ramsdale saving a penalty.
But that's right. Did we do a penalty shootout in the preseason game against Barcelona as well? Even though that game,
home one against Sevilla, was it? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe so. Where look, you can put it down to preseason, but it's also a chance to slightly replicate the sort of scenario where at the end of a game, you've got to refocus and concentrate and trust in your technique and your character and deliver what you need to deliver from the penalty spot and for the goalkeepers to make some saves. Like, I know we haven't had a huge amount of experience with competitive penalty shootouts, but there's sort of a little bit of method to the preseason madness.
No, I think so. Absolutely. And on the subject of goalkeepers, I would say, you know, even if it weren't for his penalty heroics, I thought David Raya had a really good game for Arsenal. He made some important saves. And I thought there were a couple of moments where, you know, Porto got a dangerous ball into the box and he came and collected it super calmly. You know, as I said, there was a bit of nerves every time Porto got into the final third, but I thought he counteracted that brilliantly. And it made me sort of quite fancy him going into the shootout. I thought he'd look really assured in the game and hoped he could carry it through. I wonder as well how big that tossed coin for that shootout was. You know, it was...
Yeah.
Again, Sporting Lisbon was in all of our minds and that shootout obviously took place at the other end with the away fans there. And when Martin Odegaard won the toss and pointed to the North Bank and said, you know, we're going and taking it down there. There was a big roar because I think everybody felt that's significant that that's gone our way.
Sure, I agree. Odegaard didn't actually win the toss. You could see on TV that the referee had a coin and he said, you could slightly overhear him and he said something like, if it's blue, it's at that end. And if it's yellow, it's at that end. So blue would have been the Porto end.
That's his pure chance.
Yeah,
right.
So he flicked it up, did the coin, and pointed directly to that end. So it wasn't a case that Odegaard guessed right or whatever. It was just like the referee's coin toss. And then he said...
Big moment, that, I think.
And then he asked Odegaard, do you want to go first? Yeah, we'll shoot first, he said. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was big. That was big because, like, the dynamic of shooting into a goal where your fans are, you know, the old cliche about sucking the ball in, but also being able to disrupt to some extent, you know, the opposition penalty kicks and the fans behind that goal were fucking amazing, I have to say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everyone had their scarves, you know, and when the Porto players were taking, the scarves were whirring overhead, just kind of blurring their field of vision.
Yeah.
Unified chants of wanker, wanker to every Porto taker, which I enjoyed. It was also really funny when Arsenal players were taking. So, you know, as they were coming up, they'd get their song, you know.
I heard the Havertz song, yeah.
Havertz song, waka waka. But then when they set the ball down, the sort of whisper went through the crowd of like, okay, shh, like, don't put them off while they're doing their run-up.
So, oh, like, yeah. Like a rugby player taking a kick and everyone goes
exactly,
really quiet.
Yeah, so we'd go, like, really loud on the walk up to the penalty spot and then a hush to allow them to take it. And then a roar when each penalty hit the back of the net. I was to be honest with you, when we're discussing extra time, the second half of extra time, I was just trying to work out my five takers for most of it. So what was the order? It was Odegaard.
Odegaard went first and then obviously scored. Small Pepe went next for Porto and he scored. Then Havertz. I have to say, you know, we've had conversations about Havertz and could he be more decisive? Could he be more clinical? You know, is there a bit more oomph to come from him? But, like, he takes a good penalty, this guy.
Yeah,
he really does.
And probably of the guys who stepped up for Arsenal, he was the one where I was maybe, you know, a little bit more nervous, but it was a brilliant penalty.
Yeah.
Just very super, super composed. So he was next. And our penalties were really good.
They were. Wendell went after Havertz for Porto. David Raya saved it where he got a touch
and
to it.
I didn't know that, I have to say. So because I was kind of behind the other post of the goal, I just saw the ball sort of hit the post and hit Raya and go out. Only when I left the ground did I see the save, because that's a brilliant save.
Yeah, I got a fingertip on it. If it hits the post and hits him and goes back in, does that count?
I think that's a goal, which seems kind of, would have been incredibly cruel. Fortunately, we got the break.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, you know, whoever misses the first penalties, I think the momentum's with you at that point. And you could see Arsenal's players feeling buoyed by it.
Saka next, no mistake, 3-1. Who was next? Grujic? Is that his name? I can't remember. Grujic, I think.
Quite possibly.
Anyway.
They were all just wankers to us, Andrew.
Sorry, it was wanker.
It was wanker. They had wanker first, wanker second, wanker third, and then wanker fourth,
so third,
I believe.
Third wanker scored, even though David Raya almost got there. He got some fingertips on that. Declan Rice stepped up. One of those where he counts on the goalkeeper diving one way. And it's very interesting because before the shootout, they were talking on TV about how Diogo Costa has such a great record of saving penalties. And I don't think either of the Arsenal goalkeepers have it. Like, it was weird. They were talking, they went off on this thing about, like, should Mikel Arteta sub on Aaron Ramsdale if he thinks he's better at saving penalties? Ali McCoist was going, yeah, you know, I'd do that, but I've no idea if Ramsdale's any good at saving. It's like,
well, that's kind of the important bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we know, in open play, he doesn't have the best record. I think he did save a couple in pre-season, as we were saying. But Raya acquitted himself brilliantly. You know, saved two, might have saved a third. That final kick that Porto needed to score, it was interesting. So Diogo Costa had been, every time an Arsenal player scored, he would retrieve the ball and kind of protect it and hand it to the Porto player as they walked up. And I actually was watching that thinking, like, that's quite smart. You know, because it just gives them that level of assurance. It doesn't allow Raya to really get involved, get in their face. He's, you know, the last thing he's seeing before he takes the penalty is his teammate giving him a word of comfort, whatever it might be. And then when it came to that final spot kick, I don't know if Costa was just disappointed he hadn't saved from Rice or whatever it was. He didn't get the ball.
Mm.
And I was looking at the touchline. And I think it was Jorginho and Aaron Ramsdale pointing at the ball, screaming, get the ball, get the ball. And David Raya goes and picks it up. And then suddenly it's all fun and games. You know, he puts it on the spot. The ball's not on the spot. He's telling the referee, no, it's not on the spot. He's standing 2 yards away. He's in the guy's face.
Yeah, I'm watching it here, actually. He's got the ball in his hands. He gives it to him. Yeah.
So every trick in the book, it was a nice piece of kind of shithousery. and got the right result. You know, he makes another good save. What a moment for David Wright. Yeah. I mean, I know he's been at the club for a long time already, you know, several months. He's been a first team player since, what was it, September? But, you know, this is the moment that will be remembered for him this season. And the moment that in some ways he really arrives, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, does this sort of cement Raya's place at Arsenal? You know, because goalkeeper is always the hero. When you save a couple of penalties in a penalty shootout, the main focus is on you as the goalkeeper. I think, you know, huge credit to the four guys who stepped up, the guys who aren't wankers, you know, who stepped up and scored the penalties, because, you know, it's a tough job and you really have to hold your nerve. You've got to show a lot of character. You've got to really make sure that your technique and your ability is at 100%. But Raya, of course, is the goalkeeper, makes the saves. You know, it's a save that wins us the penalty shootout and sends us through into the quarterfinals. And yeah, I mean, the scenes at the end were really nice with Ramsdale, with all the players and everything else. But, you know, there is still a sort of, I don't want to say a Raya-Ramsdale schism. I think everybody kind of understands, you know, where the goalkeeping situation is and where it's going. Nevertheless, Ramsdale is still a big favourite with many fans. So maybe Raya kind of needed a moment like this to really connect with everybody. And I hope he did, even the most staunch Aaron Ramsdale fans. I hope that they, you know, will appreciate what Raya has done and how he's helped us into the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because David Raya, it's a great moment for him and it's a great showcase and opportunity, but partly his style of play doesn't necessarily lend itself to that. Like, I don't think he's a moment's goalkeeper. And I think that's why Mikel Arteta likes him and wants him as his number one. I think it's a bit like asking for moments from, I don't know, Gilberto Silva.
Mohamed Elneny.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's not a flattering enough comparison.
I know what you mean. But he's just like a steady guy who does his job. You know what I mean?
He does his job and he's about, it's what he brings to the structure and the formation and the shape and the system. The style of play is really the phrase I'm looking for. With, you know, he's a goalkeeper who prevents moments from happening.
Mm-hmm.
But a penalty shootout is its own thing, and it gave him an opportunity to make those kind of saves that live long in the memory. And yeah, I think it's a huge night for him and a big step forward in terms of, you know, I don't think in terms of how Mikel Arteta thinks. I think Mikel Arteta is really clear on what he thinks, but maybe in terms of how warmly he's kind of received by the fans. And he was brilliant on the night.
He needed to be, because fine margins in penalty shootouts, but sort of going back to what we spoke about right at the top of the show, the importance, I think, for Arsenal to come through this and to be in the quarterfinals of the Champions League with the likes of, you know, Barcelona, Real Madrid, PSG, Bayern Munich. It would have been a huge, huge blow not to be in there based on the quality of this team, the progression it's made, that you're going, okay, you'd have to take stock and, okay, do we go again next year, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I do think in terms of not just progressing in the tournament, but progressing as a team and a club and how Arsenal are perceived in Europe as, you know, a side that is doing things and going places, you can't really underestimate how important this was.
Yeah. I think the club part of that is enormous, actually. I think it's really important that we try to kind of shift this idea of Arsenal as sort of nearly men. You know, I think we need to be a club that arrive in the final stages of big competitions, year after year after year. I'm not saying we have to win everything, but we've got to be one of the names who are there at the end fighting. And this is a really important piece in that. And it gets the club over a bit of a hurdle, you know, that we've struggled to clear for 14 years. So I was delighted, obviously. And I think it's big for Arteta too. I do think his European knockout record, you know, it isn't the best. And I would say that this going through here is not the most convincing, but I still think it's really important that he did it. And it gives us an opportunity of a really enticing tie in the next round. And also, I think maybe takes a fraction of pressure off that Man City game at the end of the month. I mean, if we'd lost last night, let's say we'd gone out
yeah.
the Champions League, our next game is at the Etihad in the title race. I don't know, man. I don't like the sound of that.
I know what you mean. Yeah, you could be like done in two competitions in the space of a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Close to it, yeah. You know. And whereas as it is, it feels like we've got absolutely everything to play for. We can go to the Etihad with a bit more confidence and belief and feeling like there's still a lot there for us this season. And it's March the 13th and there's so much ahead of us in what remains, what little that remains of the season, so much to play for.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to learn from this game and these two ties and how Porto played against us and how we dealt with it. Ultimately, we got over the line and that's the most important thing. But, you know, I think you can look at maybe some individual performances. Like, have you ever seen Bukayo Saka as shackled over the course of two games as he was in these? I don't think so. And, you know, he admitted that himself last night on TV after the game. He was talking about how he was buzzing, but, you know, I didn't have my best game tonight. I don't think he had his best game in the first leg, but then, you know, neither did too many. In midfield, Jorginho and Rice, they did fine, but they couldn't dictate the play the way that they have in other games.
That's true. I thought Rice actually, every week we say how brilliant Declan Rice was. I don't think he was bad, but I thought it was certainly one of his tougher games.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And you learn from these kinds of experiences and you take a lot from how difficult things are. And if you come through a tough battle on the right side of it, it gives you the ability to just sort of stop, take stock, watch the videos. Even for Mikel Arteta, I'm sure, as much preparation as he would have done about Porto, you know, as his Arsenal career continues, and hopefully we have more and more Champions League ties and more difficult opponents to face in the Champions League, this will stand him in good stead as well. You know, give him ideas about how to produce different tactical solutions to deal with opposition who play like this. So, you know, overall, hugely, hugely positive night. Just a really enjoyable one. Some scenes, it's fair to say, at the end of the game. I don't know if you've seen too much of the TV footage or any of that. Sergio Conceição having words with Mikel Arteta. He refused to shake his hand and was sort of whispering in his ear. And Arteta was looking at him and go like, what the fuck are you on about? Didn't seem to be too inclined to listen to what Conceição had to say. And there were some comments, obviously, afterwards about how he said Mikel Arteta had insulted his family in Spanish. I mean, it just seems like distraction to me from a manager who's lost the game. Probably some insults were traded. And there are, you know, specific exclamations in Spanish, which if you read into them very, very literally, could be taken as a slight against a certain member of your family. But, you know, in general are just sort of exclamations rather than being specific towards that particular person. You know what I'm talking about here? I mean, do you make
of it? Compared to what Postecoglou's mother was getting in the North Bank, I'll tell you that. But yeah, I had the same thought. You know, I wonder if Arteta used because that phrase in Spanish is used pretty liberally, isn't it? And certainly not particularly literally.
No, unless you're sort of face to face with somebody and you're just, you know, making it very personal. I just think it is storm in a teacup stuff from him.
And he's got previous, right? Like he accused, I think, maybe it was Guardiola and maybe Thomas Tuchel of sort of insulting him or using derogatory language on the touchline. So there's a little bit of a feeling of
Do you think he wasn't fucking doing the same?
Well, also, yeah. I mean,
you know, come on.
Arsenal have kind of strenuously denied what Conte Sao has claimed. My thing is more, I sort of think that's sport and that's football. I mean, some of the things that are said on the pitch or on the touchline, you know, would not sound pleasant in the cold light of day, but it happens in the game. And, you know, at the end of it, you move on, you know, and you keep it on the pitch or on the touchline or in the technical area, whatever it might be. I think to take that into the press conference is a really odd move.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. You know, it happens. And then, you know, there were maybe some players a little bit aggrieved. It looked like for a second that Gabriel was going to go over and fight the entire Porto team, only for Arteta. And I think Zinchenko to pull him away, which is probably for the best. But there's a small part of me would have really liked to see what happened with that situation. Because he took I think he had his shirt off and he was ready to go over. And it was like, hey, come back. Carlos Cuesta, I think, was over there as well to sort of stop him getting stuck in. Like, you can understand if Porto were unhappy and upset. Arsenal players quite right to celebrate as much as they want to celebrate. And look, I also think there is a connection between a team that plays the way Porto play and a team that's also a little bit of a sore loser in the end.
Yeah. I mean, what were they upset about?
I don't know.
Two games in a row that we've had sort of rowdy scenes at full time. I gather the report that Brentford were really kicking off in the tunnel with the officials and all sorts at the weekend was accurate.
Bring me the tunnel cam.
Yeah, exactly, right? We need tunnel cam back. A lot of saltiness going on from vanquished opponents of late, so which is all good fun. But the celebrations were brilliant. There's an amazing clip of
William Saliba,
yeah, thumping his chest and, you know, really giving it some. I just don't know, Andrew, if he's ever going to settle at Arsenal, that guy. I'm not sure.
Yeah, hopefully he can find a way to make a connection with the fans and the stadium.
I just don't know.
One day. So, look, it was a brilliant night in the end. I think, you know, the celebrations are tied into the relief, which is tied into the nervousness and the doubt that you might have when a game is as tight as this over two legs. You know, we've done what we needed to do and we're into the quarterfinals. We have very little time left, so we don't really have time to do a part two and do questions, but I do have a couple of quick questions here for you with a number about, like, who would have been your fifth choice to step up to the spot? Why would it have been Ben White? Asks Blade in the Discord. And ARJ225 says, our players looked lined up in order of penalty takers on the halfway line. To me, it looked like Benjamin White was next. How funny would his penalty to win it have been?
Oh, wow. Would he have been next? That's interesting. Because who was... Jesus would have been an option, I guess. Eddie Nketiah. Maybe they were the obvious alternatives. Ben White. I mean, he's certainly got the composure, hasn't he? Yeah, it would have been funny, but I'm pleased for David Raya that he got that moment.
Yes, and I'm also pleased we didn't have to go as far as we did, you know.
Yeah.
But a Ben White trickler down the middle like Lauren against Spurs that time would have been really something, wouldn't it?
It would. I'm just looking at a still image of the celebrations the moment the Arsenal fans, Arsenal players, you know, realise they've won, and Ben White does look quite happy. So maybe he was a little bit relieved that, you know, I don't even have to take one.
Well, I mean, there were other players like Jesus and Nketiah, Zinchenko, you know, technical players and forwards who maybe could have
well, that was one of the nice things. Like, I could think of more than five takers for us. You know, I was like, we've got six or seven on the pitch here who I'd fancy if it came to it.
Yeah.
This is good.
Yeah, really is. And Mohits Archives on the Discord, just a very sort of broad question. Would you rather face a stronger team like Real Madrid in the quarterfinals or later in the competition? Do you have any preference about who it is we get at this point? There is, you know, potentially an easier, in inverted commas, easier tie if you get the winner of PSV and Dortmund. But... you know, the others are the big boys. It's PSG, it's Bayern, it's Barcelona, it's Real Madrid, smaller boys like Manchester City in there as well. Well, you know, not a real club. You know, there are real clubs in Manchester City too. So do you have any preference? I mean, I have to say, I'll sort of take anyone but City.
That's where I am. Honestly, I really don't want that. I think, because it would be, there's loads of reasons. It'd be very difficult. It's not got that kind of glamour of a European tie because we face them in the Premier League. I feel like it would draw so much focus from the Premier League campaign, and I feel like there'd be kind of knock-on effects from it in the Premier League. I don't want that. I'd take almost anything else, genuinely, because I'm pretty relaxed about it. Like, you know, if we get one of Dortmund or PSV, that'd be great. That would be a really favourable draw. But if we get a Real Madrid or a Bayern or whoever it might be, well, this is what it's about. Mm-hmm. This is what you get into the Champions League for. You know, this is the kind of night we've been craving for 7 years at a minimum, maybe longer. So
yeah.
I really feel like bring it on about the next round, you know, and what will be anyone but City is my opinion.
Yes, I'm 100% with that. I think just another two games against them during the run in towards the title is sort of the last thing we need, which sort of probably makes the draw against Manchester City inevitable. But there you go. There's not much we can do about that. Okay. I'm leaving a small break here for an ad for people who are listening on the main feed. You don't get ads on Patreon, by the way. So here's a gap. I'm going to put an ad in here if there's one to be played.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. And for the rest of you, thank you so much as always for being with us and for experiencing what is a big, big, enjoyable night in Europe. James, as ever, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you on the next one. I'm getting this completely wrong. Because you have to do bye-bye. So why am I even saying goodbye to you at this point?
Don't worry.
I'm all a tizzy.
I know. We changed the format and it's thrown us.
I'm all a tizzy. Okay, let me say goodbye to everybody. We'll talk to you a bit later in the week. We'll probably do something on Friday after the draw, just to react to the draw a little bit. But this extra Arsecast extra will take the place of Friday's regular Arsecast. Probably, who knows. For now, take it easy and we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.